And welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Now, we missed you last week. You were with us the week before, but the week before that, I turned you into a robot. So it's been a spotty run, you, Sebastian. How are you doing?
Well, last week, as you know, I had the Lurgy. Take any Lurgy like disease, cold, flu, allergies. Probably
you got,
COVID.
You
I'm
got
not
the
sure.
man flu, didn't you? You got the
not quite. You used to be my roommate. You know how I get. Okay, so take the flu for example. What are the possible lists? You know, scratchy throat, coughing, fever, chills, runny nose, sneezing. Okay, replace every symptom in that list except for runny nose and sneezing with more runny nose and more sneezing.
So just the runny nose and sneezing.
Yeah. But you've heard me sneeze. Mm. For 2 minutes straight before, once you had to catch me. I almost passed out. I couldn't breathe. I was sneezing so much. Well, no, you didn't. You watched me and you're like, do I have to catch you? But yeah, there was a time where I was just like, achoo, 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 for like 2 minutes straight. And yeah, no, I get really bad. And it's just, it doesn't matter what it is. If anything has sneezing in there, but I mean, I never get the flu. You know, I don't get
well, if you ejected. Do, you do a very good job of spreading it.
I don't
much sneezing.
Yeah, I don't get the sweats or the chills. I don't get any of that. It's just so much sneezing that I cannot breathe. Yeah, it gets real bad. But yeah, I'm much better now.
Well, I have an update. I made the ridiculous satirical comment that all of the Hemsworths were Australian. Mm-hmm. Now, in the run-up to World Pride at the Mardi Gras in Sydney, mm-hmm. In the run-up to that, we were talking about Sydney Pride and the world. I think it was actually Pride Shark. If you don't know what Pride Shark is, you should definitely Google it. It is safe search on. Like, it mm-hmm. is a very family-friendly Pride Shark. Now, yes. I'm just trying to find...
And I love that it's not a metaphor. It is a giant plaster, realistic looking shark.
Yeah.
With like a rainbow sweater, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I can't find the email, but one of our listeners emailed me in and pointed out that there were, in fact, many Canadian Hemsworths or Hems of the World, Hemsworths, who are notable in Canada. So
Hemsworthies.
The Hemsworthies. What would you call a group of Hemsworths? I mean, in Australia, it's a beery, you know.
A huddle? I don't know. Huddle? But yeah, I actually have the email in front of me. Yeah, and okay, one of the big ones was the individual who composed the Log Driver's Waltz.
Yes.
So also known as Canada's third national anthem.
It really is. It
one
really
being
is.
O Canada, number two being the Maple Leaf Forever, and three, I swear, is the Log Driver's Waltz. You sing that at a party. If you're overseas, you stand on your chair, conduct the orchestra with your stein of beer. If there's a Canadian in the room, they will sing along. I've actually met friends by doing that when I lived overseas.
I would have thought it was Barrett's Privateers that would have delivered that rousing.
That did happen. Oh my God. I was at the beer gardens in Sapporo and I just stood up in my chair and went, oh, the year was 1768. And then at the other end of the Sapporo beer hall, I heard this tiny voice go, I wish I was in Sherbrooke. No. And I'm like, okay, come over, sit with me.
Absolutely.
I made a friend that day.
Well, I mean, that is definitely a neat trick. Let us know if you were a Canadian in a bar overseas and you needed to find other Canadians, what go-to karaoke classic? Is it Barrett's Privateers? Is it the Log Driver's Waltz? Let us know. Mm-hmm. And I want to apologize to the Hemsworths and the fans of mm-hmm. Hemsworths for my ridiculous statement that all Hemsworths were Australian.
Len also works.
I feel like that might be a very a more specific
it's
generation.
Very generational. Yeah, exactly. But it all has worked. I can tell you from that as well. But anyway.
So you picked up quite a few Canadian stories, but I'm going to start. Actually, let's start off with one of yours, because I think the Hanlon's Point story out of Toronto is definitely an interesting discussion that's happening across the city. So tell us more, Sebastian.
So Hanlon's Point, for those who are not familiar with Toronto, and actually even people who are familiar with Toronto and aren't familiar with Hanlon's Point, it is a it is currently a nude beach, sort of on the edge of Toronto. Well, not when I say the edge, it's actually near the Toronto Island. But it's sort of in this hooked over point where it's kind of hard to see if you're on the shore unless you really go around it, which makes it a pretty good location, grand scheme of things, for a nude beach. It has been a gathering spot for the LGBT community, especially gay men, but not necessarily exclusively, for almost 100 years. And the city of Toronto has been consulting about what they're going to do with the Toronto Islands in the future. And one of the things they're talking about is converting Hanlon's Point into a sort of a fairground, a public space. They're still debating what it's going to look like. We don't know if it's going to be a fairground in the sense of like, you know, bumper cars and whatnot, or if it's just going to be a large open space where you can do concerts and have public gatherings. But there's a lot of concern in the queer community that they're just going to fully lose this location, that this historic LGBT location within Toronto, this gathering area that's been there for longer than anyone in this conversation has been alive, that it's just going to disappear. And it's really going back and forth, but there is this concern about, I mean, first of all, there's sort of an urban land shortage, sort of, but not quite. And they're willing to expand into underused areas, and they're looking at Hanlon's Point as being just that. And the community has choice words to say.
Well, this doesn't surprise me at all. I know that the city of Toronto has, in its longer term vision, cleaning up the waterfront, really redesigning that entire waterfront place. I think it's supposed to be one of the biggest ecological projects of the city's undertaking. Really sort of massive civic and engineering on the waterfront. And the city of Toronto, it has the problem where if it continues to expand, it's already bumping into every other neighboring city. So yep, it's looking at every square inch it has available at how it can improve it. I don't know. I feel like when the representation of queer community in Toronto is Church and Wellesley, where, of course, businesses, I imagine, are struggling to pay the kind of rents that you would pay there.
Everyone's
being
priced out.
No one could ever live there. It's been gentrified and priced out. It's very difficult to be gay in that particular, or afford to be a queer business in that particular area. Mm-hmm. And then you get to Hanlon's Point, entirely free in many senses of the word. As it were, you know, it doesn't cost a thing or even clothing. I think as a venue to express queer identity, and it speaks to, there is an element in gay culture, specifically gay culture, that has a history, always informed by a history of, you know, cottaging and cruising and you know, these kinds of activities. And broadly speaking, the community's become sanitized over the last couple of decades. You know, it doesn't necessarily happen as much with Grindr and other things. It's easier to communicate other places to go that are less public. But I think Hanlon's Point remains one of the very, 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 very few places where gay men can meet and get a suntan. On the beach.
Yeah, I mean, from the perspective of the municipality of the greater metropolitan area, I could see them eyeballing it as useful land and just saying, okay, we're just going to pave over it or plant petunias or whatever, and then just put up a statue of some famous LGBT person from
No, I was just going to say, aren't they supposed to pave over paradise and then put up a parking lot? I think that's what goes there.
They're actually in downtown Toronto. There is a building that has a museum where you have to pay a dollar to go in just to see a tree, based on a lyric from that song. It's more of an art piece. I've actually been there. The person who's supposed to man the door so you don't get in without paying is never there. But there is a tree museum where you have to pay a dollar just to see them. In downtown Toronto. But yeah, that general, yeah, absolutely. But I can understand from the city that they want to make it a space for the entire city of Toronto and not just for the LGBT community, specifically gay and bisexual men, specifically nudists, specifically ones who are cruising. Really, really narrowing it down. And one of the tricky things is that about 120 years ago, because there is a long history of Hanlon's Point being used by gay and bisexual men, that basically would have been the countryside. That would have been far away from the city center. That would have been sort of a nice, quiet getaway. But now that we have mass transit and faster cars and a subway system and a pretty good streetcar system, getting out, it's not the countryside anymore. Like, the city grew around it, and it's kind of been largely left alone. And part of me thinks maybe they should celebrate that it lasted as long as it did before people even talking about it.
I want to jump in here just a little bit. I'm inclined to agree that perhaps there is a better civic use of that land, 100%. But did I ever tell you about the lady I bumped into at a conference, and she was looking into archiving hookup and sexually immature graffiti in washrooms?
Okay.
Specifically gay graffiti in washrooms. You know, if you want to see a big transaction, go to this business, you know, that kind of thing, but obviously less metaphorical. So she was exhibiting this, and what she was talking about was how it is an effort at capturing the sort of more grimy underbelly of queer expression, because these washrooms all just get painted over, and that snapshot into, you know, the quirky edge of queerness gets literally cleaned away. Mm-hmm. And this met, you know, this, the, her study into that reminded me here of Hanlon's Point, because although I agree that maybe clearing it away to make room for a better civic use of the space, are we just sweeping away all of that untidy, unseemly, unwelcomed gay stuff out of the way for something more family friendly? And how do we capture that queer history in a way that doesn't, and they were roommates, affy that particular history? You know what I mean? Like, how do we keep what is being an unsanitary, you know, piece of queer history unsanitary in how we present it moving forward, you know?
Well, okay, I have an answer for that. It's pretty easy. So first we'll start with what was Jeff Goldblum's famous quote from Jurassic Park?
Life
will find a way. And here's a little thing that I'll tell you, because I happen to be a civic urban planning nerd. The city in the world with the least amount of park space is Istanbul, with less than 1% of their total footprint being parkland. The most is, I think it's Oslo with like 70%. Like, it is high rises and parks. But if Turkey can have public cruising spaces for its long history, and Istanbul is basically 3,000 years old, you know, it's had cruising places, people will find something new. They'll find a new way. And it is sad to see history get paved over like this. But on the other hand, there is nothing is true except for change. And it is kind of a pity that the slim portion of queer history that Canada has is being removed like this. Fact is, like, you kind of hinted at it earlier with modernity, with first of all, with public acceptance, people don't have to cruise. You know, you don't have to on the sly go to a location and hope that nobody recognizes you. You can openly date. You don't need that lifestyle anymore. And if you do choose to have that kind of lifestyle, there is Grindr, and you can use the internet, and there's all sorts of apps, and there are, you know, bars with shady back rooms and bathhouses. Like, there are alternatives. And I think part of the major point here is preserving history. And I'm all for that. That I do get. But I don't know. I think that the situation's kind of complicated. And short of somebody buying the land and formally keeping it in the community in perpetuity, I don't know what they could do to stop this. Because, like, the city wants land. They the number of beautiful old buildings on Yonge Street that they tore down to replace with condos. I don't think they're going to care about a strip of beach.
Yeah, I think on that joyful note, I don't think they care about a strip of beach. Let's jump to our first track of the day. Yet again, we aim to do all Canadian, all LGBT identified, so that we are highlighting queer artists. This is a favorite of ours, Sami Volkov, who is sort of 60s pop and R&B, kind of very approachable. You called him, I think I keep saying Buddy Holly or something Holiday. It's Buddy Holiday? Buddy Holly? I forget.
Buddy Holly, yeah.
Yeah. A modern gay Buddy Holly is who he reminds us of. Anyway, this is In Spite of the Night by Sami Volkov, and we will be back just after
Hollywood
this.
Look up and deep into my eye. I don't remember your voice. How does your laughter still ring in my mind? Try to think of the words. Oh, so simple that you needed to hear. In the sun and desert. Well, I hope that you look at that man now and then, and that you might think of me. Should I come to your mind? I'm not so hard to find.
And welcome back to Cancreer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, I want to start off with the Canadian story that I found. And it has caused some debate, I think, between let me read you a tweet. It all stems from a tweet. So Evie 6000 was a contestant in season 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race Canada, Canada versus Canada. They always have about 5 Canadas in them. did quite well, and then anyway, so this is a tweet from Evie 6000, and the tweet says, "Parents need to stop bringing their kids to drag shows that aren't explicitly intended for a child audience. Stop. You may not care, but your kid gets filmed and will be used to hurt our community." Evie then tweets, "A trans performer who probably saw the child and just wanted to make sure she had a good time by holding her hand and walking with her is now the target of conservative outrage. This blank is dangerous and potentially even life-threatening." There's a few other tweets about that, but it's caused a bit of a split in opinion. I don't think it's an even split, but there is definitely a split in opinion. What's your initial take here, Sebastian, to children should not be...
Full agreement. Yeah, if it's not in a library, if it's not in a public space, if it's in a dark, dingy bar, no. If it's in a library where all the adults have been vetted for working with vulnerable people, then absolutely take your kid there. A bar is not a place for a kid. Drag shows historically have been incredibly racy. That's the point. If they didn't offend you or offend your sensibilities, then they weren't a good drag queen. Things have been, as you kind of said earlier, sanitized quite a bit lately, but I mean, it's still meant to be a very deliberately offensive kind of an experience, and that's been toned down quite a bit over the past 10 years. But still, I do not think that a small child in a gay bar at a drag show, I am all for saying please stop that. 100% agreement. Yeah. And as for the bit about the sort of by proxy, kind of like by association portion of the tweet, I think it's more complicated, but I do understand where that's coming from, and I kind of do agree with it. There was a famous drag show back in the summer where there was nudity involved in the drag show, and on the back wall there was a poster that said it's not going to lick itself, and there were clearly small children in the audience as well, and that got shared around social media as, what are people doing? And it's tempting to say it was the sort of the critical right side of the aisle looking at that, but there were also people in the gay community saying, like, this looks bad on all of us. Why did you let this happen? Mm-hmm. So it's very guilt by association, guilt by proxy. The easy way to do that is, like, if you denounce it, then you're not really standing with them. And I do think it's kind of complicated, because if you're not, I don't think it reflects on all gay people everywhere or all LGBT people everywhere, but I understand the sentiment that it could.
I think there's an interesting take in some of these tweets. Someone was saying, how about we trust in the decision-making of the parent that decided to take the child there? Like, is the parent not capable of making informed decisions for themselves and their own children? So that's a really hot take. But I think one of the ones that jumps out to me is, are we self-policing? And does this reinforce that notion that queerness and drag is inherently dangerous? So we are ourselves keeping out kids, and they're reinforcing this interpretation. Like, are we digging our own grave?
It's not about it being dangerous. It's about it being adult. And we don't need self-policing. There are liquor laws in place saying that minors are not allowed in certain kinds of establishments. Like, a minor can go into a bar that is also a restaurant. You can take your kid into Kelsey's. You can take your kid into a taco joint that also has a sitting bar for if you're waiting for a table. That's completely and totally legal because there's food involved. A 9-year-old's not allowed into a nightclub. And that's just normal liquor law. And I am pretty sure they did not have a carvery at these drag shows. Like, I'm pretty sure you could not get up and go over and get yourself, a couple scoopfuls of a shepherd's pie while you were watching the drag show. Like, this is a nightclub environment. This is not a family restaurant that happens to have a bar.
But not necessarily. I mean, what about performances at the Glade bookstore? You know, it's licensed. They can't sell alcohol. It is a queer space. Do you say, oh, there's someone in drag, no kids allowed?
If I had a bookstore and we had a drag act, I would say to the performer, like, by the way, we have floor to ceiling windows displaying our products in the front. Don't do anything that could get me in trouble with the law or with Twitter. Like, keep your clothes on or.
And I think that's part of this discussion as well. Like, if drag is taking place and there is a child there, there were surely enough adults involved in that process to believe that either the performances are going to be appropriate or that, I think a lot of people need to have made some wrong decisions.
For that to
take place. I think it's interesting. People are all over the place in terms of how to approach this.
I'm sure there was a ton of adults in the room when they were deciding whether or not they're going to burn people alive for being werewolves in the 16th century. Like, you don't, being adult in the room doesn't mean you're paying attention and thinking clearly. I think there was just sort of a failure along the way for people. Well, first of all, I mean, some of these bars, I'm surprised they're not being shut down by liquor licensing. Or that the bars haven't gotten around the loophole by just, putting up a serve yourself breakfast, all day breakfast station, which is what they do in some strip clubs, which they actually made a scene out of in Parks and Recreation. It was hilarious. But anyway, it's the whole thing. There's illegal stuff happening here. And it's not even about the drag queens. It's about children being in a nightclub environment. I don't think that's appropriate. And if you are a drag queen who has a racy act, then you should absolutely consider what the venue is before you bring out your heaviest material, let's say. You know, if you're doing drag in the park because it's pride and you're up on stage and you've got the community watching you, there's certain things you can't do anyway because you're now in a public space.
We're going to circle back to the tweet. And EV6000 says parents need to stop bringing their kids to drag shows that aren't explicitly intended for a child audience. So I think this is also putting the onus on the parent. It's like, look, if we are at the Glad Day bookstore and it's an all ages event, then obviously the performances are going to reflect that. You know what I mean? Like, people are quite capable of adjusting to an all ages audience. Yeah. You know, I don't think drag as a whole should be so, I'm sure somebody dressed up as Belle from Beauty and the Beast is not going to be a racy performance.
I mean, there is a famous drag queen from here in Ottawa who pointed out the interesting relationship between drag and clowning.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think there's definitely going to be occasions when children and drag queens will be the height of entertainment, like pantomime.
Yeah.
But definitely not. And I think what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Evie's putting the onus here on parents to unless it says yes, it always says no in terms of taking children to drag shows. And I'm swayed towards agreeing.
Yes. That's your assessment? I'm swayed towards agreeing?
Yeah. That's
I
where
have a
I ended
five minute
up
rant
in this.
And you say, yeah, that sounds right.
yeah, I'm not saying I'm easily swayed, but I have been brought round on this one. Well, if you disagree, let us know. At Talk Can Queer. I'll get there in the end. We are jumping now to actually, let's do another story before I forget about it.